Welcome back to the Stanford Healthcare AI podcast. And we're so excited to be joined by Dr. Abi Abernathy, who really needs no introduction, but a physician, scientist, formerly ran Verily, Flatiron, and roles at the FDA, and is now running Highlander Health, which is promoting companies that generate new evidence, both from investment and a philanthropy perspective. And we have a ton of topics to run through today and all the advancements. So welcome, Amy.
Well, it's awesome to be here with you. Thank you.
So the first topic we wanted to jump into, and I'll pull up some data, is all of these new advancements. And so, Matt, help ground us into all these new things we're seeing here from the new AI companies and models.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I know we talk a lot about the acceleration of the capabilities of these models, but it's almost, I don't want to, obviously we keep pretty close tabs on it, but in general, I feel like, we see results like what you're seeing on the screen, which again, we can argue whether this is the way that you would test quote unquote intelligence. But nonetheless, we see this repeatedly that these benchmarks that we've put out there, whether we're trying to make them harder or more focused on certain areas, they keep getting saturated, right? But I also feel like it's not really reaching the public consciousness maybe as much, or at least the physician community. I'm, folks maybe still dabbled in, ChatGPT 6 months ago, or maybe they're using it occasionally for a quick question answering. But are we really like taking advantage of what I'm starting to see as an overhang of capability versus what they're being used for? I don't know. Like it. I guess my point is, would we even know AGI if it happened, and would anyone even talk about it at this point, right? Because it just seems like the advancements are so fast.
I mean, it's interesting, and I'll be curious what the two of you think as well. If I let's start in the beginning, Matt, and your point is that the capability sets of the models that we have in our tool suite right now are largely way more powerful than probably how we're using them as clinicians today, or even understand that they could be used. And a lot, this is about adoption curve, right? Figuring out how do you put a solution into your day-to-day workflow? How do you understand a combination? I'm going to leverage this solution, and I'm going to also be able to communicate, and I'm going to come back to the clinical context in just a second, communicate what I've learned in a way that now helps, for example, the person sitting in front of me know what to do next. And you were saying, Matt, like people are largely just dabbling and trying things out, but a lot of what is going to be needed for uptake is that dabbling. I personally, some days I use Gemini, some days I use ChatGPT. Like it kind of changes around on the day for no good reason, to be honest. And I know I'm not pulling the greatest capabilities out. And part of it is because, frankly, I'm still trying to figure out which use cases are most productive. I'm still practicing how to prompt. Frankly, in that particular scenario, my son is way better at teaching me how to prompt than anything I read in the medical literature or online. So my 24-year-old is more effective than papers about prompting in medicine. So I need to learn how to prompt. I'm trying to understand also within the portfolio of my work what is legitimate. So for example, I am trying to figure out if I was working on an editorial over the last 3 days, is it legitimate to ask LLMs to help me edit? Is it legitimate to ask them to help me think? Is it that they're a brainstorming partner? Is it, kind of all of the above? Or should I just tell the LLM, go for it, write my editorial, I'll see you in a day or two? And so in thinking about how to legitimately embed LLMs into my work, there isn't a training manual for that either. And then you take something that's way higher risk than writing my editorial, which is the care of a patient. Yesterday, my problem was my mother had a series of radiology tests, sent me the tests, and then wanted me to tell her what was going to happen next. And I was trying to decide, like, how legitimate is it for me to ask ChatGPT to help better communicate all this information to my mother? And where's the liability? How do I know I'm communicating the right information? It was a radiology test that I actually didn't know how to interpret, so I didn't have a way of being sure the LLM was gonna be able to do its job. So the first part of this is really my saying to you, I think we're all really learning how to incorporate LLMs into our work and our daily life, how to master them, and what's legitimate. Then you jump to this other question that you asked, which is, would we know AGI if we saw it? And given the fact that we're kind of bumbling at the moment, I suspect we probably wouldn't know AGI if we saw it, even if we were really bullish AGI is coming tomorrow. But I'm going to stop there with my soliloquy and ask the two of you, would we know AGI if we saw it?
It's hard to keep up. And I think this is
Right.
something, and this is part of the reason I think we're doing this is we struggle to keep up with the current advances. And it's more or less Matt and I's full-time jobs in the work that we're doing, focusing on AI. And we're struggling to keep up testing all these new pieces. And I think, Amy, the point that you brought up is so interesting, and I'll pull up this one other chart is the consumer adoption is crazy of these tools, right? Everyone is using them at home. You're a physician and you're now saying, wait, hey, should I be using this to interpret radiology results? Because it will help explain this to my mom, but you're uncertain, right, of the capabilities. And these are just the real issues that I don't think we are talking enough about as a community in medicine, because we kind of pretend it's not happening. Many of the health systems kind of pretend, well, we're not going to give people access to these tools. People aren't going to experiment, but it's happening whether we like it or not on just how many people are using these tools now. And so, no, I think to your question, I don't think we'll know AGI when we see it in healthcare.
Yeah, there's this piece that feels so 2000 to me. Oh, maybe it's 1995, but I'm an oncologist by background, and there just became this period of time when every patient that walked into the clinic had a stack of paper they printed off, probably on a dot matrix, but sort of on their printer, of things that they had pulled off the internet. And there was some combination of help me make sense of all of this from the patient, and shame on you for not knowing all of this from the patient. Or maybe I was sort of shame on myself because I was like thinking to myself, holy cow, I don't know what this all means. And as clinicians, we felt a little baffled about what to do. You could just say, don't listen to the internet. Well, that seemed kind of a silly point of view. And for us as clinicians, to ignore that our patients are incorporating LLMs into their day-to-day life, let alone into their clinical questions, sort of seems so silly. We could go all the way on the other side and say, use LLMs for everything, but we know that LLMs are fallible. And so that's probably, moving too far in a different direction. So guiding patients thoughtfully down this path is the new 2025 plus task. It's really been with us for a couple of years now, and probably should look back to how did we adopt quickly in the late 1990s and what were some of the lessons learned.
Yeah, I really like that analogy because I can't think of a clinical day I've had in the last 10 years where I didn't use the internet at least one time, right? But in the 90s, that you've been like, why would I use the internet? I just, but what this progression I'm sort of feeling, and I don't know if I've articulated this quite fully formed thought yet, but I feel like computers, let's just say, were like, okay, they offloaded our need to do computation, right? And then with the internet, I feel like they offloaded our need to remember stuff at scale. And then with the social media, it's kind of offloaded, like our attention is now gone. And I feel like this frontier is like our cognition is now being potentially threatened. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like there's a slow progression. Then, of course, we can get into robotics, which I don't know if we have enough context around. But just for me, like, how much longer will it be till it's normal for just like I would use the internet today? Would I use LLMs just for everything, just interacting with them? Hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing for this treatment. This is the test I'm thinking about, like just having these conversations, or frankly, even agents, and abstracting that even further and say, hey, can you go run and do an analysis on this chart before I have a conversation? It's really fascinating, but I think that the part of this is the daily use, like you said, the dabbling to get the familiarity and understand the capabilities. And on the other side, the patients are kind of pushing us. I see it already too. It used to be like, you know, your Google search isn't a replacement for my medical degree kind of thing. Because, right, I mean, there's a lot of sources you could be like, you know, where did you go? But now it's like, well, which model did you use? And how am I supposed to, you know, how am I supposed to have all the understanding of where the capabilities of each individual model are? You know, we've done some work for these benchmarks that we're just trying to barely get our hands around. And it's, we know we can't use med QA like as law in terms of what they can do, but yet we keep finding in these head-to-head comparisons, physicians with AI, physicians alone, AI alone, that AI just tends to do better than AI plus physicians, which is kind of calls into question. Even if I'm using these tools, am I still performing as well as I need? That this is some work from Google that was published in Nature around their AI AMIE system, which, you know, admittedly is somewhat more geared towards you know, medical tasks, but look at these lines, like these trend lines, like even the clinician with that tool underperforms. And this is not just an isolated result. Like we see this time and time again, back to the point where when I used to be asked, will AI replace physicians? I'd be like, of course not. It's always going to be AI plus physicians. And we just keep seeing these kinds of results. Here's another one. O1 preview by itself outperforms physicians using these different tools. So I don't know the answer. And part of it, I think, is do we have the best practices of how we interact with these models? We're kind of fumbling around in the dark, right, when we're using them. But still, I don't know what to sort of what to advise folks at this point.
So I'm going to go back to something you just said about sort of the sequential offloading, right? So I'll start there first, which is, you know, we're at this place of, as you described it, offloading cognition to LLMs. And what that is, at least, you know, if you sort of kind of look through the progression you talked about, it was sort of computation at scale, it was information finding at scale. So now it's really integration of myriad, very diffuse potential data points now to be able to have a moment of inference or decision, right? Like, so that's where we are, and what we start to offload to LLMs is the ability to reach across all of those potential sources of information and make sense of them in the moment. So kind of that's where we are. But we're not offloading social interaction. You know, like we kind of talk about, for example, LLMs are kinder and write nicer messages. But at least I sincerely believe some of that is that as we've had a number of new technologies come online, including, as you mentioned, social media and offloading of our attention, our ability to deal with that overload as humans has gotten caught up in our ability to be empathetic and emote. And that LLMs to help offload some of that demand so we can get back to being more human again seems very important. The second thing that I would say as it relates to that is that it is not writing nice emails is not the same as being able to be a confident leader of people, of setting vision and course in a way that everybody wants to move towards a combined future, of being able to help a scared patient and family figure out how to navigate a really tough decision that likely incorporates a series of facts for the patient that would not necessarily be embedded facts if you just were to look at the usual data set. And so, you know, I suspect that there's some offloading of some of the demand of emoting, and therefore the opening up of a new frontier that looks much more like LLMs having taken care of some of our need to push cognitive overload to individual data points and pull some of that cognitive work to the part of the work that's distinctly human. So that's kind of and maybe that's my, glasses half full point of the world, but that's where I hope to see us go. And then the other thing that you brought up, and the figures highlight is at least right now, specific discriminant tasks, right? Differential diagnosis, pulling a whole bunch of facts together and making a medical decision about what to do next. LLMs look better on their own than LLMs plus physicians. But just like anything else, probably that's some version of physicians still not knowing how to use LLMs, as you said, Matt. And I think about one of the things that we're trained to do as doctors. We are trained as doctors, and we go through internship, right? As interns. And I don't know what kind of clinicians you're trained as. So I think actually both of you are radiologists. No, internal medicine and radiology. Is that right?
Matt's radiology. I went into the startup world.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. So, internal medicine and oncology, and when we basically train internal medicine residents, part of internship is teaching interns to go from sequential tasks to that moment in time of having the gut instinct of sick versus not sick. At that point, clinicians have hit a new plateau of how they integrate facts and apply it to individual patients. And that instinctive plateau basically is embedded with many parts of our learning and thinking, including our own biases, that we have not built LLMs into hitting that plateau. So I would suspect that clinicians pull LLMs down a little bit because those two things are working at odds a little bit for some period of time until we learn as clinicians how to do the structured tasks, like what we teach interns, that transition to integrated thinking and fuzzy thinking, to then that transition to fuzzy thinking plus LLMs. And we just, I don't know how we, hope at Stanford you're thinking about how do we train this. It certainly hasn't been something I've been talking about yet.
We're talking about it. I don't know that we or anyone has all the answers here. The recent things that we see, over the past, month, you see people like Bill Gates talking about how we won't need doctors in 10 years. Folks at DeepMind, Eric, we see all these very, very sensational headlines. Now, I agree with you. There's so many components of the work of the human connection that won't go away, kind of despite what these headlines are. But I'm curious to just touch on these few parts and kind of, Amy, you have such a new viewpoint of, right, being an oncologist, having led at these technology companies, having led at the FDA, like, and now you're really focused on like evidence generation and what do we need to show. And so, we pull up these charts, we pull up these different studies, the evidence seems to be mounting. But what evidence do we need to start actually diffusing this into medicine? Because as we look at it, or as I look at it, it seems like we're just getting this divorce between where the technology is capable of, certainly what we're training people to do, but then what is actually happening in our health systems? Like, what's actually different today? Not that much. And so, like, what is the evidence that we need to start to change it, to start to make it look different? And from a few of your hats, and especially like, how does the regulation tie or not tie into this adoption?
Yeah, I mean, so many important questions built into one, Justin. And frankly, in my mind, made worse by sort of the current state of overwhelm of the system itself, right? So the healthcare delivery system itself is is not set up to, easily adopt and integrate new capabilities, partly is just kind of swallowing water of what needs to happen. My first observation is we're continuing to look for details and facts around LLM performance, but we have fewer details and facts about LLM implementation. So the evidence side around what does implementation look like? How does implementation happen well, right? And calling it best practices, I think, is an underwhelming definition because it should be around evidence-based optimization and kind of getting to a fine-tuned understanding. But just think about how much detail we have about the embedding of algorithms of all different types into everything from search engines to all these things that we use in our consumer lives. And that comes from many, many different types of testing, causal inference, ABA, like the list goes on, and figuring out that same mechanism to embed and adopt really is an implementation science that we really need to be talking about. The other part of that implementation is figuring out implementation plus performance, right? Because as you implement LLMs into clinical delivery settings, the clinical delivery setting itself starts to change, right? And so there now are a series of ongoing underlying changes, including change in the conduct of care, change in the underlying data that is being generated that now feeds subsequent action. And we need to be able to not only test implementation and study best ways to implement, we actually need to study how that actually looks across time in the myriad different settings where we're implementing. I think that's a huge part of the work. Also, kind of embedded in your question, Justin, was, do LLMs and does AI just, totally take away our need for doctors or clinicians? And I think sort of like we need to define clinicians very broadly, right? And it probably reduces our demand signal for certain kinds of clinicians. But if we go back to my point before, we've sort of offloaded some of the cognition, but we've now increased the space for humanity. We're going to actually need much more of humans in the loop to interpret and make sense for patients and humanity and sort of point the way. I still think that's true, which may need a differing load balance of the different kinds of individuals and capabilities across the system to get that work done. And then the last thing you asked is sort of from the regulatory frame. I think for the regulatory frame, there's a lot of struggle that's happening to figure out, what is the best regulatory approach. There's those things that are clearly regulated. So when it's software as a medical device, if we're thinking about an AI algorithm to read mammograms, and we're like, it's very clear what we need to do and how we need to think about regulating those devices. If we look all the way on the other side and we look at LLMs to support the practice of medicine and clinical decision support, it becomes less clear exactly what the regulations look like. And all of this sort of right now sort of presupposes a fixed world where you have to have a predetermined change control plan or something else to, kind of actually to set a set of parameters up front that may or may not really actually make that much sense or be workable. So I personally believe that we're going to see the need for more flexible governance systems, even both from the standpoint of self-governance from industry and also some of that set through FDA in order to set the path of how we go forward. I know we're at time, so maybe like the next time we talk, I kind of give you some ideas of what I've been thinking along this way and we can bat those around.
Would absolutely love that. And I know we've had some discussions before on this topic, but how do we generate the evidence? How do we think about the monitoring? How do we start to share how we govern these things? I couldn't agree more. Matt,
Yeah.
we'll give you the last word here before we wrap.
I'm I'm extremely bullish on the idea that we will come together and come up with a new category entirely for both implementation, but I think for the regulatory aspect of this and how we use it. So I'll increasingly keep an eye on where the capabilities are, but my gut tells me that we're going to continue to have this overhang for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and we're going to have to figure out how to navigate through it. So thank you for inviting conversations that at least, start to get to the surface, but we got to figure out.
Well, amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.